I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. Throughout the program today, reflections on the past and the future. A man whose father was born into slavery talks about what tomorrow's historic inauguration means to him. We find out the critical role enslaved Americans played in building our nation's capital, the Capitol building, that is. And we have our own inaugural poem. That's all coming up in just a few minutes. But first, we speak with a man whose life, work, and career span the historic change we're about to witness. Activist, singer, author, Harry Belafonte. One of the most popular entertainers of all time, the man known as the King of Calypso was an important financial supporter and frontline participant in America's civil rights movement. Belafonte counted the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. as a personal friend. And since Dr. King is being remembered on the eve of President-elect Barack Obama's inauguration, we thought it was a good time to call him and ask him for his thoughts. And he's in the Washington, D.C. area. Welcome, sir. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Michelle.
How did you meet Dr. King?
A phone call. I was in my home, and I received a call from someone who identified themselves as Martin Luther King Jr. And he said, "You may not have heard of me, but I need to talk to you." And from that simple beginning, we embarked on a life of a friendship that was very near and dear to me.
Was it his personal qualities, you think, that first drew you to him, or was it his mission and that the personal side came later?
I think his mission, first of all, alerted me to the fact that he was in our midst. And then I had occasion to, from this phone call, meet him some days later in the basement of a church in New York City, the Abyssinia Baptist Church. And in that basement, we were supposed to have met for what was agreed upon for 20 minutes. And at the end of a little over 4 hours, I emerged from that meeting knowing that I would be committed to the cause that he had put before me, and that I would do whatever I could to enhance the struggle that was emerging.
You know, sometimes it is the case that people who are very important to a mission are not always the greatest or the nicest people to be around themselves, but you had a very close, warm, personal relationship with him. What is it that you liked about him as a human being?
I liked his vulnerability. It was one thing for us to see Dr. King from the perspective of his enormous strength and the kind of decisions that he made and the things that he said, and his fearlessness in the face of the journey. But to know him intimately was to understand how he plagued over the decision-making process, how he was deeply concerned that everything he said and everything that he'd do would have ramifications that he hoped would be the right thing in the final analysis. He was a man who was deeply rooted in moral concerns. And he knew that every time he spoke and talked about mobilizing a movement or a demonstration, that that could perhaps end in taking the life of one of the people who would be a member of the protest, or even a severe injury, which was not uncommon. And that to watch him plague over the responsibility of leading people into those kind of responses was something that endeared me to him, because I saw him struggle with his humanity.
You know, speaking of that, we just found some tape of a speech that Dr. King gave in India in March of 1959, almost 50 years ago. And I'd like, if with your permission, I'd like to play just a short clip of that speech.
Please do.
Here it is.
First, we think that the spirit of Gandhi is much stronger today than some people believe. That is not only the direct and indirect influence of his comrades and associates, but also the organized efforts that are being made to preserve the Mahatma's letters and other writings, the pictures, monuments, the work of the Gandhi Smarak Nidhi, and the movement led by the sainted Vinoba Bhave. These are but a few examples of the way Gandhiji will be permanently enshrined in the hearts of the people of India.
And I was struck by this because, in a way, he would have no way of knowing this, of course, but he could have been speaking of himself, because we are also engaged in this question of how is Dr. King to be remembered? How is his work to be carried on? Do you have thoughts about that? Do you like the way we think about him now, or is there anything about it that troubles you?
There's much about what Dr. King did and how it has been translated into this post-period of his life that I think leaves a great deal to be desired. However, having said that, one must face the reality that the power of his mission was so indelible and so overwhelming that it's not going to be easy for the world to lose him in the affairs of history. I think he will always be in the forefront of people's thoughts, of people looking for choice, for people looking for another way in which to do things. I think as long as there are wars, there'll be voices reaching out for the teachings of Dr. King. As long as there's poverty and discrimination and hate, I think Dr. King will have a resonance in our daily lives. What I am somewhat disappointed in is that public institutions, the schools, the churches, the political platforms of our nation and our world has not really done enough to disseminate his teachings, to teach the young about who he was and more about the mission. As a consequence, I think a lot of our citizens are oblivious of what our struggle was about, and that I think is unfortunate. It's something that can be repaired. The question is, who has the will and who will do it?
If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Harry Belafonte about the life and legacy of Martin Luther King Jr., whose life, of course, we observe today on this national holiday. You know, there was this dust up, I don't know if you want to call it that, over you had at some point wanted to auction some of the letters that you had in your possession in order to use those proceeds to support your further philanthropic work, and there was a lot of sensitivity around that. What do you attribute that to? Was that just a personal thing, or do you feel that there's some larger issue around how his works, his everything he touched, is to be handled right now?
Well, great men and great women, and courageous men and women, have spawned children into our world, and I think we're all joyous that there is that DNA, that there is that inheritance in our midst. And once that happens, there are expectations that children will follow in the legacy of what they have inherited. Certainly that was expected of the King children in relationship to both what Martin and Coretta King had aspired to and achieved. There is a dysfunctionality that anyone knows about that exists among members of the King's children's family. And I think that that's unfortunate, very much, very unfortunate. And I think a lot of that is what is at display. I would just as soon not get into the details and the intimacy of that.
That's fine, because there are other things we wanted to discuss, but I appreciate that. Just a couple more things I wanted to ask you. Did you think that Dr. King ever envisioned what we are about to witness tomorrow, a black president in our lifetime, your lifetime?
I think that was very clearly a part of his vision, that one day, he said it in his speech, that we'd be judged for the content of our character and not by the color of our skin. And I think that Dr. King meant that thought to be applied everywhere, not the least of which would have been in the White House and one president or more in the White House. I think he envisioned this. What most of us had never thought was that we would have lived long enough to see that unfold.
And you've been a thorn in the side of many a presidential administration. You've been a tough critic of this current president. I think many people remember that you called General Colin Powell a house slave back in October through 2002. What do you think your role is now as a lifelong social activist, a social critic, a man who has tasked himself with speaking truth to power? What do you think your role is in relation to this administration, this upcoming administration?
I've done nothing special for this or any other administration. My role in life, and the one that I've chosen to protect and to care for tenaciously, is to be a truth teller. It is to look at human misery, human suffering, and human aspiration, and to make sure that those who control the instruments that navigate us through our daily lives do so with moral persuasion, do that with moral thought, and to be ethical in how they use the power that has been given them. And when that does not exist, then I think citizens have the right and the responsibility to speak out clearly and precisely to be able to stay and hold these leaders accountable. That's what we did. And that's what we should continue to do. Many have capitulated that responsibility, and there are many of us who do not understand capitulation.
Harry Belafonte, a social activist, an entertainer, an author. He was kind enough to join us from Potomac, Maryland, where he is staying while participating in the festivities around Martin Luther King Day and the inauguration. Mr. Belafonte, thank you so much for speaking with us. Thank you for your work.
My pleasure. Thank you for asking me to come on.